As we left off yesterday, just beginning to get a little bit of a understanding of the sukkah of Beria, the aspect of Beria that we spoke about yesterday was, is this chumrah of Beria, the fact that Beria is not batel, is this only a din midrabban, and that's what the Mitzvah told us, or is it perhaps a din midraisa, which seemed to be the view of Tosfos, it seemed to be in sync with the general sheep of the Baal HaTosfos, that there is such a concept of dvar v'chashuvim, to some extent not being batel in a Torah. But now the question becomes for us, even though in Shulchan Aruch we paskin that Beria is only a chumrah midrabban, there's no question that is the final psak halacha. The Tosfos is not accepted in Shulchan Aruch. Nevertheless, it's important for us to know when we speak about a Beria not being batel, what do we mean by that? Do we mean that it's never batel? Do we say it's like Dovashesh Latir and until the Biela Flav batel? Or do we say not batel just means it's not subject to the regular rules of Bittel, whatever those are, Rov, Shishim, but maybe there is some higher level, some higher threshold that Bittel would be acceptable. If that is the case, then what is that higher threshold? So if you take a look back at the Ritva, back at the second of the Marmakomos, so the Ritva says quite clearly that the sugya is over before we even start. There's no bittul, nothing to discuss. The Ritva writes that where did this idea of Beria come from? Let's go back to the Ritva, second of the Marmakomos. Upakina Beria Shani, Pregina Perish, Ginanosha Beria. Ginanosha is considered to be an entire unit. Bakoshu Beria, Kashem Shechoshim Lidinalka, Shalom Lavakoshu. The same way that Minatora, it is chashuv for malchus in order to be chayav malchus even without eating kezayis. Kach chashuv in iser, so too lagavi isur lagavi taroves, it is chashuv sheoser bekol shuv. I mean that it asks bekol shuv. The words kol shuv seem pretty clear. They mean literally kol shuv, namely there is no shiv. And the truth is that's probably what we would have expected. We have no gemara that says otherwise, at least not explicitly. The context of Asugya doesn't seem to suggest that there is some other kind of number out there that we're not familiar with. But there are some Rishonim who disagree. And if you go down to the sixth of the Marmakomos, so the Rush quotes those Rishonim. V'yesh b'nei chachamim, there are some chacham who are of the opinion. One of those chacham who the Rush is referring to is the Rash. Shouldn't confuse the Rash and the Rush. The Rash was a man of Shimshon, Balei HaTosfos. And the Rosh, was supposed to be of Asher, was the Rosh we're familiar with. So the Rosh is making reference to an opinion of the Rosh, one of the Balei HaTosfos, that was subscribed to by other Rishonim as well. The Yesh Lech HaChom Shekosfu, the Beria B'Teila, that a Beria can be Botel sometimes. What's the magic number? So catch this number, B'Chameos V'Shishim, a 1 to 960 ratio. That is the Shia Bittel for a Beria. We've seen a lot of Shiurim Bittel over this course of the year. We've never, ever seen this number. Who in the world made it? Where did this come from, this number? Very awesome. Where did Rishonim get such an idea? It arrived from a Mishnah Maseches Trumos. Maseches Trumos Brek Asiri. Dav Tomei Shekovsho Im Dav Tor. The Mishnah discusses if you have a non-kosher fish that was pickled and marinated, soaking together with a kosher fish, now you have a lot of kosher fish and one little trader fish. Koger shumachzik sasayim imish mishkal asarazuz b'Yehuda shem chomish sloim begolil. The Mishnah gives us this very, very complicated mathematical equation to figure out what the ratio of kosher fish to trader fish is. I have no idea how to begin to do that math. I will trust you, Hisham, and become a Hisham, shu echad b'tsham yos v'shishim. It's a ratio of 1 to 960. That's what the Mishnah says. That's what the Yerushalmi explains. Now, what's not 100% clear is what the Mishnah is even talking about in Ishu of Beria. But the Yesh Mechom, the Rash thought it was. The Rash was of the opinion that the reason why the Mishnah is insisting on such a high level shear of Bittel is specifically for this very point, that the Mishnah is referring to a non-kosher fish that's getting mixed up with kosher fishes, and it's very, very hard to all Ma'ur Yachet, can't even tell which is which. But the problem is that the trefa fish is a beria. And as a beria, it is not going to be batel berov. And therefore, unlike the Ritva says, well, therefore it's never going to be batel. No, it will be batel at this very, very high number of 960. What in the world does this number 960 correspond to? Very, very unclear. I think we can pretty satisfied to say that this is not a shiur d'oraisa. It would be very, very hard to sell this idea that this seemingly arbitrary number of 960 would be a shiur d'oraisa. So let's put these Rishonim into the camp that we're only dealing with a derabbanan anyway, And for some reason, some strange deep dark secret, Chazal picked on this astronomically high number of 960 in order to say at that point, Ad Kidekach, the Chashivas is over. So if it's 1 to 2, it's still Chashim. 1 to 3, 1 to 5, 1 to 60, 1 to 950, still Chashim. You reached a certain point, Yigvul Yesh B'davar, Ad Kan V'lo Yosya. What does this number correspond to? Very, very hard for us to really understand. Some of the Rishonim who quote this number give almost like a little bit of like an asmach, a little bit of like gematria, a very, very strange kind of a gematria. I have no idea what the Rishonim meant with this. They say that, well, if you think about it, so if you take Shishim and you times Shishim by 10, so you get to 600. Then if you take Shishim and you times it by 6, so you get 360. And you add the two together, get 960. Again, I have no idea what that means. I don't know whether it's just a way to remember the number. I don't know whether there was some deeper secret about it. I have absolutely no clue. But the number 960, I don't want to use the phrase arbitrary, but doesn't seem to correspond to anything in halacha. It is a shiur shetik the chachamim, presumably just to negate the chashivas, the significance of this barrier. But again, the source in the Mishnah and Trumos and the Yerushalmi would be based on this Mishnah that talks about something about this number 960. And then the Rush continues that the Yerushalmi speaks a little bit more about this number 960. That Rabbi Yossi Barbun paskin this number 960. The achbara. What does an achbara mean? I thought an achbara means a mouse. What would the shayla be? Shenis arev beheter ubitlo be'elef. That Rabbi Yossi Barbun once was mevatel a mouse in 1,000. Now wait a second. 1,000. I just said 960. Where did 1,000 come from? Says the Rosh, don't take the number 1,000 in the Rishami so literal. 1,000 round it off. Basically, what Rabbi Yossi Barbun must have paskin was, it must have been there was a mouse that was bottled in a lot of other foods. And the problem was the mouse was still a barrier. If it's a barrier, it wouldn't be subject to the regular rules of bittul. Mouse is treif. It wouldn't be subject to the regular rules of bittul because of its chashivos. It reached a point of LF or 40 short, 960. So then, yesh lahakya. So the Rosh is quoting the Rash. Another Rishon was saying, both that strange Mishnah Trumos talks about fish, 960, and the mouse of the Rishami that talks about 1,000, is lopped off 1,000, it also means 960. These are the two sources in Chazal for this magic number. Now, needless to say, if one argues on these two sources, if one reinterprets these two sources as not bearing any relevance to this discussion, then obviously, nafalei so nafalei binyan, if you deny that these two sugyas, both the Mishnah, Trumos, and Yerushalmi, have anything to do with that topic, then it's going to be kind of hard to be mechadish yesh me'ayin, a shiur of 960. So the shiur of 960 is holding on for dear life to the truth, the authenticity of these two sources. The question is, says the Rush, we're not even sure whether this number is correct. And quite frankly, we're not even sure if this has anything to do with anything, these two sources. So first of all, the Rush says, whatever those two sources say, they don't seem to be born out from Agamara. Kashla Mishmais. Why? The Medami Bittul Burial of Bittul Chatichu Liskabe. We didn't even talk about Chatichu Liskabe. Hopefully we'll talk about the next sugya. The Gemara talks about the possibility of a chashuv steak, chashuv piece of meat, chashuv portion that you would serve to a guest called the chetichah rilis kabeh. And the din is afil bialflo batel. It's never batel at all. And the Gemara, almost in the same breath, in the same context, discusses barriers of chetichah rilis kabeh. Not absolutely 100%, but pretty, pretty close. The Gemara tells us that barriers of chetichah rilis kabeh are pretty much the same kind of halacha. So says the Rush. If chatichah rilis kabeh, we know are never bottled. That's the Gemara explicitly in Maseches Beitzah. Those are for sure never bottled. If those are never bottled, so how could a barrier be bottled? If Chazal are looking at both of these things with the same eyes of chashivos, it seems very difficult to say, this double chashuv is never bottled. But this double chashuv is bottled 960. If the underlying problem, the underlying impediment to bittul is really one and the same of chashivos, it's very, very difficult for us to differentiate between the two shiurim. That's the Rush's first attack. Maybe one could argue, maybe, the Gemara just means that not that they're identical, the barriers, chilikos kabetz, but they're similar in the sense that they need big shiurim. How big shiurim do they need? either 960 in the case of Beria, or so big that it's impossible to ever reach because afilu b'yalef afilu lofim is never going to be batel. All the Gemara meant by comparing is that they're both not subject to the lenient rules of Bittul Barov. The Gemara never meant to say that they're identical in terms of afilu b'yalef afilu lofim. So it's not 100% clear that our Gemara is actually a refutation to this view, but still the view is quite a chiddush. And again, the view of the Yesh Bechachamim is hinging upon the those two proofs, the proof of the Mishnah Trumos and the proof from the Rishali.
Is Echad Be'elef an issue that the Raisa wouldn't be Bato and therefore the Rabbanim it's just choosing a measure, and then the measure that it's choosing is because of Metzius, meaning that it could happen that a mouth would fall in. They didn't want to asa everything completely, so they did it in such an extent that it has no meaning. Or it's an issue of halacha atma that's is the raisa.
Well, again, if midah raisa it's not buckled and the game's over, then there's no shear whatsoever you can put on it. If the real true din is that filu that it's never ever buckled, that's what Chazal would say filu be elaf buckled. If midah Torah it's buckled and now midah rabbanon. It's not going to be batel. So then Chacham can choose whichever shear they want. So sometimes they may choose a high shear, sometimes they may choose, as you say correctly, maybe a shear that may almost not be attainable. So maybe a shear that in effect is a may practically be equivalent to saying in a batel. That may be true, but Chazal did open up the pesach, they opened up the window. But one thing is clear, if it's not batel in a Torah, then none of the shear are going to work because you can't be makel on a dinder ayis, you can only be machmer on a dinder ayis. So how could we possibly refute these two proofs? So there are a whole group of Rishonim, the Rashi included, is going to join that group, who say that the entire Mishnah that we quoted from Maseches Trumos is totally and completely irrelevant to our discussion. The Mishnah was talking about the tzir of fish, about marinating, pickling, soaking, trafing kosher fish together. It wasn't talking about bittel guf hadag, it was talking about bittel hatam hadag. We're removing the tray for fish from the mixture. That's not even the question. The tray for fish is nikel ayin. It's going to be taken out anyway. I want to know, was there any juice? Was there any brine? Was there any fish taste that emanated from the tray for fish into the kosher mixture? Now, normally we go with the numbers of shishim. That's the number one shear. That's the shear to be compared with this tam. Unless it's something that has a very, very sharp taste. I think Gemara talks about those of the fetal timer, things that are used for flavoring, other kinds of sharp foods. Shishim, as we've seen time and time again, is not an absolute end all. It is possible to have a situation where a taroves will have shishim and still be asur because there's still tam. How could it be tam? Well, the tam is a very, very strong, very, very sharp tam. That's why the halacha is, even when you have shishim, if by some chance you eat the food and you begin to taste the chazit, you can't eat it anymore. It's asur. According to some deraisa, some derabanan, tam lo batil. So when you have a very, very sharp kind of a food that gives us a very, very strong tam, the number shishim falls by the wayside. That's what the Rishonim said. That's exactly what the Mishnah is talking about. The Mishnah is not talking about the dam. It's talking about the tzira dam. That's what the Mishnah said, tzira dam. The kavsho always means tzir. So comes the Rishonim and refute the proof of the Eish Mechal by saying, the Mishnah in Trumas is not even talking about bittul beberi. It's talking about bittul tam. The reason why you need that strange number of 960, that's not some gematria halacha mashmasina number. That's the experiment number. Chazal tested and realized that even the strong tasting fish brine, vulyesh bedavar, 960, you can rest assured there's nothing there. So we can breathe a sigh of relief that Mishnah and Trumos is not supporting the Yesh B'chachamim. Mishnah and Trumos is not even relevant to the discussion. What about the Rishalmi? The Rishalmi said that horav yosbabun b'achbara, in a mouse, about a mouse. So if that's the case, that he paskin the shayla about a mouse, isn't that a beria shayla? Isn't that a proof that the number is 960/1,000, whatever the specifics of the number are? So the Rush continues, the Yesh Mefarshim, the third line, let's say a paragraph of the Rush, the Yesh Mefarshim, the Achbar Shem Makom. He says, first of all, you mistranslated the Rishami. Rishami says, if Yossi Barbun paskin the shayla about Achbar, does not mean the shayla was about a mouse. Rather, it meant it was the town of Mouseville. That means there was another place called Achbara. In the city of Achbara, nothing to do with mice. Rabbi Yossi Babun Paskin the Shaila. What was the Shaila? The Shaila was about the tzir, about the juice, about the brine, a fish. It means, well, the Rishami never meant to tell you there's a second story here. There was no new story about a Shaila, about a mouse that got mixed up with other animals, other kosher foods. The Shaila was the same old question of the Mishnah about fish brine. They got mixed up in Mouseville. And the Psach of Rabbi Yosef Abun was, It's both built in 1000/960. How do you know there was a place called Achbaro? Can Isa Prekasov as a Paul? The Gemara Mitzia references the place. The name of the place was Achbaro. Bekoi Atzir, the Iribe. And it was talking, the case in the city of Achbaro was talking about the case of the Tzir. The Ka'amash Rabbi Yossi Hurricane, the Isimachim, the Yosh Time at Karvli Elif. And now comes the Russian says, and I'll prove to you that the Sechem Shad is correct. Quite two different approaches to this Rishalmi. Either Rishalmi is talking about being Mavatal a mouse, which would lead us to believe that a barrier could sometimes, at very high numbers, be Batal. Or the Rishalmi is talking about the city of Mouseville being Mavatal Tzir of Dagim, and it have absolutely zero relevance to our discussion. The Chaimis Taber says the Rush, I think it's logical. The low Ari Be'ach versus Ari Be'ach. I don't even talk about a mouse that got mixed up in other kosher foods. Why? Mamanashach. The eat Suras Achbar Alav, if it still looks like a mouse, Nika Ben Chatira Shal Heter, Mashlicha Vashamutar. If the mouse is still intact, you can still see it. What do you mean it's bottle? It's Nika Eser. If I have a piece of trade for food that I know what it is, who in the world is mistaking a mouse for kosher salami? Obviously, if the mouse is intact, so just throw it out and finish. And I know it says, most of us probably haven't eaten breakfast yet, so you try to remain not being nauseous for the next line of the rush. If the mouse has already dissolved, it's already mushed up, it's already been mixed up and pureed into the kosher food, so it's not a berry anymore. Berry has to be that it's fully intact. Remember we spoke about if even one of the legs is missing in the bug, maybe it's not a berry anymore. The mouse has been pureed and it's totally lost its recognizability, so then that's not a berry altogether. So what in the world was the case? What was the scenario that Yosef Abud Paskin about a mouse? The mother says the rush. If the mouse is still intact, identify it, recognize it, throw it out. It's not intact, so then it's going to be both of Mashishim. You don't need the higher numbers of 960, 1,000, etc. So when all the dust settles, we have Machlekes and Rishonim. We have the Rash, and the Rash signs it. There's other Rishonim buy into this idea that yes, there is a potential bitul for a barrier at a very, very high number, very high threshold, which you don't really know what it corresponds to. But we trust Chazal's magic number of 160. And you have the Rash leading the other Rishonim, the Ritva, the Rash, was saying, we never heard of such a thing, never heard of this number.
Why couldn't the case be that the mouse was pureed, but the time that it was giving off was so sharp that 60 wasn't enough?
No, that is the case. I mean, why did the rush have to change to the name of a place? Why do you have to make Achbar a mouseful? He could have had a cat, right? He could have done that also, right? Right. Right. That would also have been a valid approach, right? So, how do we pass Kid Lahadoch on this Shaila? Now, this is not just a theoretical question about the mice falling in, not about getting nauseous. The most important application for this is bugs. Are bugs ever going to be batel? Now again, if I can see the bug, pick it out, a bit left, take it out. But what if I can't see it? It's not recognized in a whole mixture of anything, but it's a barrier. It's still, I have reason to believe that's still intact. Does that pose a problem or not? Do we say that it's a filubi elef alfi elef, it's never batel, either mid deraisa mid derabana? Or do I say no, that gvul yesh bedavar, and if I reach a certain number, certain threshold, even by the bugs, even by the barriers, I have a right to be more lenient. So the Shulchan Aruch is machmer in the Shaila. Most of the Rishonim were probably machmer in the Shaila, but not all. There was a divergent view. There was the view of the Rash, and the Rash was subscribed to this. Others agreed to this idea that Gvul Yesh Medav, there is a Shia Bittul, even for the berries, even for the bugs. But the Maaseh Rov Rishonim didn't hold the way, and Shulchan Aruch doesn't accept that. So why are we continuing to talk about it? So there is a comment of the Krasio Plasi. The Krasio Plasi is written by Rabbi Yonis and Ibishitz. The Krasio Plasi, in his comments in Yeridea, makes the following observation. It says that there are times of the year, it's warm out, it is almost impossible to be certain that there are no bugs in the flower. Bugs in flowers, an age-old problem. It exists ad hayabazeh. That apparently, and I don't know enough about the Matthias, but it was explained to me is that flour always has eggs of certain kinds of insects in them, and it just takes a while for these eggs to hatch. So Kolzman, that the eggs are not hatched, Kolzman, the eggs are almost microscopic, so they're not a concern. But if and when they begin to hatch, and now they turn into little flower beetles, whatever they're called, these little mites, whatever the specific name for them are. So after a certain amount of time, especially when it gets warm and these eggs are not beginning to hatch, so you're going to have a serious halachic problem. You're going to have bugs in your flour. This is the reason why one has to be very, very careful with flour, especially in big settings such as bakeries. We have a lot of flour around, and sometimes the conditions are very warm, so you're asking for trouble. Depending on the climate, Eretz Yisrael has more issues because of the hotter climate than flour in our community. So again, there are different sheets and different opinions of practice. There are some who insist all the time on sifting flour because of this. There are some who only insist on sifting flour in larger quantities. There are some who only insist on sifting flour certain times of the year in different locations. Again, there are different practices about this. But bugs in flour has always been a long-standing problem in halacha. Comes with Yosef Avshin and says, there's no way to avoid it. And he thinks that certain times in the summertime, warm times of the year, says you're going to have bugs in your flour. What do we do about that? Says Rabbi Yosef Avshin, he thinks that the reason why the Olam still eats flour, still eats cake, still eats bread, even though they're pretty sure there probably are bugs in the flour, he thinks that we have a right to say that you take a look at your flour, I'm looking through, I don't see it, I'm looking at my loaf of bread, I'm eating my piece of cake, I don't see any bugs in there. Even though the problem is there, says Rabbi Yosef Avshin, says it's okay. You know why it's okay? Possibly because the bugs are so small and there's so much flour there and the chal is so big, the bugs are not recognizable right now and therefore they are botel. So says Rabbi Yosef Avshin, what do you mean they're botel? But they're barriers. That's what the Mishnah said of a second Bacchus when we started to say it's the ultimate barrier is a bug. The bug is intact, the bug is fully intact. What do you mean it's bottle and mecha? I'm sitting down having my slice of pizza and there's a bug in between somewhere in this slice of pizza. I just can't find it right now. So he said, how can I eat that food from flour? It's a barrier, and a barrier is not a bottle. Says Rabbi Yosef Avshin, well, according to the Ritva, according to the Rosh, a bug is not a bottle, but according to the Rosh it is, and according to the Rashba it is, and we have a right to follow those views that we've shown him, even though the Shulchan Aruch didn't accept them. It's a big, big shas al chak. Otherwise, it's impossible to eat any kind of food from flour. It's just impossible. And therefore, the oilam is noig l'hokel. And we're relying on those shittas and rishayim that barrier is that a barrier can sometimes be betela at such a very, very high threshold. To make matters a little bit better for us, we can add a touch or two to this kula. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, we have a famous Gemara, we spoke about this in another context. The Gemara says, Maseches Nida, that Kedai, a certain sheet to rely upon Bishas Adchach. When you have a situation of extenuating circumstances, you're allowed to rely on minority views. You're allowed to rely on Das Yachid, sheetas that have not been rejected outright in Halacha. You can't dig up certain sheetas that have been totally rejected. But a sheet that's still a viable sheet, albeit not the standard practice. Kedai, plenty. Kedai, the Gemara says, Kedai, Rabbi Elias, Lisbach, Bishas Adchach. So Kedai, these Rishonim, the Rash, from the Smach, the Rishas Adchach. There is a machlekes, the Taz and the Shach, about whether that klal is only true for Dinim Derabbanan, but even true for Dinim Deraisa. So the Taz, in Hilchos Chodosh, claims that the reason why people are so lenient about Chodosh and Chutz Laretz is because since there's one view that says the Isur of Chodosh, of eating new grain before the Omer, doesn't apply in Chutz Laretz, even though probably most of the Rishonim didn't subscribe to that view. The Taz writes, it's hard to get bread, it's hard to get flour, it's hard to get grain, and therefore we could rely on the Mekila because the concept is Shas Adchak. And the Shach disagrees with that Taz, but the Shach says that rule of Kedai, Plenum, Smachov, Shas Adchak only applies to the Dinim Derabbanan. That's the original context of that Gemara, is a Nita of Zayin. The Shach claims it was only said in that Sugya or Derabbanan Sugyas, it was never said vis-a-vis Deraisas. But here, we could probably apply this Klal, Bein Lefiyah Taz, Bein Lefiyah Shach. Because according to most Rishonim, we're only dealing with the Derabbanan. If you want to claim this is a Deraisa on hand, then you have a much more serious problem. But since we said that in Shulchan Aruch, we're makil, so to speak, like the Ritva, that it's only a Derabbanan, so then we have a right to turn around and be makil if it's only a Derabbanan, and Kedai Uplev L'Smachu B'Shas Adchach, we can rely on the makil. So that's one possible defense for those who are eating certain kinds of foods, which there most probably are bugs in there. But the bugs are so small and you can't really see them now. So even though they may technically be called barriers, if you could kind of, separate them out of the flour and get them inside, they really would have the status of barriers. But by Sheo Sham, they're not going to pose a problem because they're bottle in that, believe it or not, that magic number, 960. That was one approach in Poskim to defend the Minhag HaOlam. There are other approaches to explain why maybe we're a little bit more makil in terms of bugs in certain things. This whole discussion about whether the bug is batel is presupposing that the bug is there. That's a whole other discussion. Namely, whenever you have a shayla, it's called huchos toloim, bugs. Toloim literally means worms, but it's used by the Poskim. It's a general description of what kind of infestation. Whenever you're dealing with an insect, with a bug problem in any kind of foods, there are two questions you have to ask yourself. Question number one is, do we have to be concerned that a bug is even there? And in terms of that, we have the halachic threshold of concern. Can we assume that the bug is batel? Those are two independent questions. So much of the discussion that goes into those kashrus in the modern world about concerns of bugs, in terms of checking vegetables and checking other kinds of things. So the first fundamental question is the bug even there? And we don't have Ruach HaKodesh, you know, there, but we have certain halachic models to use to determine whether it's there to an extent that we have to be worried about it. There's always that outside chance that there may be a bug in any food that you're eating. But again, there are certain risks that we're allowed to take in halacha. There are certain statistics. There are certain numbers that we're allowed to feel comfortable not to be concerned with. The same that we spoke throughout the last 3 months. Sugyos of pikuach nefesh. So there are some areas, sometimes there's a risk that the halacha says you have to be concerned with, and sometimes there's a risk you don't have to be concerned with. It happens to be in the realm of pikuach nefesh, the threshold is significantly different than other areas of halacha. In other areas of halacha, so at a certain point you're allowed to be very, very makil, whereas in pikuach nefesh, so we say pikuach nefesh, you don't follow the rov. That's why the standards for chumra, so to speak, pikuach nefesh, are significantly higher than even in other areas of halacha. But in Hukhus, Talon, Hukhus bugs, so you don't have to be so machmir. What number do you have to be concerned less there's a problem? That's what the Rishonim coined a phrase at the beginning of the Sechus Chun and other areas of halacha that's been borrowed over the Hukhus Talon. That's what's called the phrase called the Miut HaMotsui. If it's a Miut, it's a small amount, it's not a robe, it's not a 50-50, it's only a Miut, but it's a Miut HaMotsui. It's an amount that is prevalent. It's real. It's here. It's not in 1 in 10,000. It's here to a certain degree. But again, it's nowhere near a robe. It's called Halacha Miut HaMotzoi. That term Miut HaMotzoi was actually coined by the Rishonim in Hilchos Treifas, the beginning of Masechus Chulin. When a shechted animal, there's always that outside chance that it may have a hole in its heart, in its stomach, in its head. There are possibilities out there. And if I know that it does, so that would be a huge problem. Maybe this is the Rice of Treifas. How much do I have to be worried? How much do I have to spend time opening up an animal and doing a complete head-to-toe check on the animal, making sure no hole in the brain, and no hole in the heart, no hole in the intestines, no hole in the liver, etc. How much of that, how much do I have to do? So, I may have said the wrong about the liver. It was a different subject, but not for now. I said about the heart and the Kum Shel Moach. And the intestines, so holes in certain vital organs will pose a problem with treifas if I know they're there. How often are they there? How much does the halacha, demand of me to do the extra inspection to make sure the holes and the other potential treifas aren't there? So the Rishonim in the beginning of the Seventh Chulin say that the halacha requires me to check once we reach the threshold of Biyat HaMotzui. Once it's a reasonable, it is a real concern, albeit not necessarily even a 50-50 concern. What does that mean in terms of numbers? What's the ratio? What's the percentage of treifas that's labeled in halacha zemina motzoi necessitating checking? So that's what the Mishkan Yos Yaakov writes in the Tshuva. He was the Talmud of Chaim Volozhiner. The Mishkan Yos Yaakov writes in the Tshuva, that has been the accepted practice today. 1 in 10. It's a 10%. If there's more than a 10% chance of having a problem, that you have to check for. And that's the reason why we check for lungs, because lungs in an animal have more than 10% chance of having problems. But we don't check for holes in brains and hearts, etc., because those are less than 10% chance of a problem. But 1 in 10 chance, that would pose a problem for the Miut HaMotzoi. So that's the same shit that we use for checking for bugs as well. You have to take any given vegetable and say, what are the odds that there is a bug in there? Again, we haven't even... yes, is the bug bottle? We just want to first know, is the bug there altogether? So the answer is, if it's a 1 in 10 chance, how do you know that? So that's going to change constantly from time to place. You have to know what season it is. You have to know where you're getting this particular vegetable from. How do you mishar? How do you evaluate 1 in 10? It's complicated. So that's what all the hashkachas that are involved in what's called the toloim try to do. That was the whole breakthrough of Bodek many years ago. Bodek came up with, in a sense, formulas and came up with ways to mass produce certain vegetables which otherwise had potential concerns of taloim, that if left to nature may have been problematic, but can be done in certain ways with certain cleanings and certain monitoring, check, etc., that will alleviate some of those problems to enable a from person to go to the store, buy a bag of broccoli and eat the broccoli, not having to worry about having to potentially check that broccoli. So they've knocked the numbers down to which are within a halakhically acceptable risk. Well, not all that different than eating meat without checking for holes in hearts. You can eat your broccoli without checking for bugs. And again, obviously over the years, different companies have come up with different ways of doing it. And there was a big breakthrough in terms of opening up the technology of greenhouses, which significantly lowered the risk of bugs. So again, but the basic theory is that we want to get you to the point where you don't have to be concerned, where your average consumer doesn't have to sit around and check his romaine lettuce under the light like we did when we were younger, doesn't have to be worried about maybe there are bugs in the broccoli, etc. That's the goal, is to reach that threshold.
Once by the salamis, the three salamis, there's definitely something trafe there. So why does Rove work over there? Why can't you say
That's exactly our sugya. So by the salamis, the reason why it works is because there's no barrier there. So it's Bottle, it's Bottle. The bug here in theory would be Bottle Barrow. The problem is that it buries on Bottle. So we're back to where we started, that we can't take the attitude of bugs unless we go down the route of Rebus and Ibishitz. If you want to go down the route that everything is a Shas Lachak and everything is impossible, and therefore we're going to rely on the Das Yachids, so those who are not checking their vegetables for a certain extent are relying on that. That's a portion, because very often it's Nikolayan. You know, if you go to the store and you buy a head of romaine lettuce, so if you just take a look at it, you quite possibly going to find the bug. So the salamis are not Nikar, whereas the bugs are Nikar, and even if they're not Nikar, but they're berries, and berries in a potato. So the bugs are in a certain sense more chaver than the salamis. So again, once we've ascertained that we have a bug problem, then we have to begin to discuss, well, is the bug botel? So part of what we're talking about is that very question. If it's a barrier, it's not bottle. Maybe it is bottle. Maybe it's not even a barrier. So we'll have to continue this, continue this part of our discussion in terms of how barrier is playing out for us, Lamaisa, and then hopefully see a little bit more about barrier in terms of defining precisely. We haven't defined precisely what a barrier is. Hopefully we'll continue with that after Yom. So our schedule for next week is, so Tuesday and Wednesday will still be on this schedule, 7:30. And then I think we unofficially agreed to 7:15. Was that right?
Yeah, it's good for me. So,
yeah, so let me just wait for just after Yom Tov, just to find that logistically may have to be 7:10. I have to just double check when Minyan was starting here. So we may want to give people a little bit more of a buffer to get to shul and to put the tassel on. And then I realized that some of the Minyanim, I don't know whether yours are, some of the Minyanim, when they say at start time, maybe starting by Ishtabach. So people may need a few extra minutes to not be at home to start. I don't know yet the details of that. So we'll double check with everything. We'll try to finalize the time by the beginning of next week. Okay, but meanwhile, Tuesday, Wednesday, we're on for regular time. Okay? Wish everybody a wonderful
day. Have a beautiful Yom Tov.
Wonderful, wonderful Yom Tov.
Chag Sameach.
Rabbi,
we'll see everybody next week.
I think this is going to be the second time I'm going to miss you on Shavuos since I moved in. Yeah.
Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Maybe the barrier is only not batel if we know about it, if we have like some awareness of it.
Well, it's almost like a two-step thing, that once we reach the point that
context was like when, you know, seemingly there's some intention to eat this bug, like.
Okay. So you're already becoming to a different svara. That maybe the whole idea of chashivas and beria doesn't make sense bechlal by bugs. We're here, I'd much rather not have the bug here in a certain sense. So you're mechaber a little bit to what the Mishkas Yaakov talks about. The only problem is that the Shulchan Aruch and the Rishonim don't seem to bear that out. We'll talk a little bit more about it on Tuesday. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't seem to say that. So the Mishkas Yaakov suggests that Me'atzmo, that very, very similar svara, as another limud chus for the Olam, that this is the whole svara is based on chashivas, and here, the guy is plotting to get the bugs out, but he just didn't succeed in getting them all out. How can you turn around and call that chashivas? Yeah, so then we'll talk about it. So it's very excellent.
Okay. Rabbi, thank you. Have a good Yom Tov.
Have a Yom Tov, everybody.
Rabbi, would the eggs of the barrier be considered a barrier itself too?
The eggs means if you could see the eggs, that's a machlekes Rishonim, whether an egg itself is a berea or not. Most Rishonim pass that an egg per se is not really a berea, but that's if you could see it. If it's microscopic, so then it wouldn't be a problem at all. So those eggs or those bugs in the flower, I'm not sure you could actually, I don't think you can see the eggs themselves. If you take a look at your, what the experts have told me is that every bag of flour in the world has those eggs in them. Take a look at your flower. Have you ever seen an egg of a bug inside a flour? I don't think so. I don't know.
And if you sift it, you could get out the eggs or no?
No, you're not going to get the eggs, but the eggs are not a problem. You sift it before you bake it, so then you can get out the bugs, and then whatever flour, whatever eggs are there, don't count in a look anyway. I mean, they're microscopic, so they're like eating bacteria, so to speak, which also is not a problem. Okay, good.
Yeah.